Conor Lennon from UN News, and I'm in Dominica, the nature island of the Caribbean. It's a lush, mountainous country that benefits from ample natural water supplies, a wonderful climate. I've seen cashews, mangoes, almonds, coconuts. There's cassava. I'm missing a few, but you get the idea. It's very fertile. It's very lush. But for all of its natural assets, Dominica is also described as being highly disaster vulnerable. And that means the country is prone to being hit regularly by hurricanes. And when the last one swept through in 2017, Hurricane Maria, it caused huge devastation across the island. And in the aftermath, the government announced plans to make Dominica the world's first climate resilient country. But as the climate crisis threatens to lead to increased intensity and frequency of hurricanes, is this really feasible? And what's the UN's role in helping Dominica and other small island developing states to cope with extreme weather events? To find out, I'm delighted to be joined by two very prominent Dominicans, both of whom have strong views on the subject. Firstly, we have the president of Dominica, Sylvanie Burton, the first woman and the first member of the indigenous Kalinago community to be the country's head of state. Thank you for being here today.
Welcome, Conor.
And Lorenzo Sanford, the youngest ever chief of Dominica's Kalinago community, who was just 22 when he was elected to the president in 2019. And I'll be asking you in a second why a 22-year-old wants to be involved in community affairs and politics. But first of all, President Burton, congratulations on two firsts. You were elected last year, first woman, first member of the Kalinago community. It must have been a big deal for you personally, as well as for the country.
Indeed, thank you, Conor. Yes, I say it's, you actually said two firsts, but I say three firsts. First woman, first Kalinago, and first Kalinago woman to be president of the Commonwealth of Dominica. So first three. Indeed, it has been a journey as a young Kalinago woman working towards excellence for your community, not thinking that you would ever become the president of the Commonwealth of Dominica, but here you are, charged with that responsibility. And so for me, it is a privilege to serve Dominica. And for me, it was really about my people. It was about the Kalinago people, because the Kalinago leaders always ask, when will we ever have a prime minister who is a Kalinago? Or when will we ever have a president who is a Kalinago? And being asked as the first woman president for Dominica and the first indigenous person, I could not have said no. And so it is for my people, it is for all indigenous people, not only in Dominica, but worldwide. And it is for all women, not only Dominicans, but women throughout the world. And to be of service to my country, to be of service to my community, that's what my purpose is in life.
We've been talking a lot about, over the last couple of days since we've been here, about the status of the Kalinago people in this country. And we're in the Kalinago territory right now, in this beautiful building, which has been built according to traditional architectural tradition. And it's very different, isn't it, from many of the other small island developing states. In fact, from many, many other indigenous people around the world. I mean, all indigenous people have very tragic histories. They suffered a lot during the colonial period. You all suffered from war, slavery, and disease. And the Kalinago were no exception to that, of course. But you didn't only survive, you've also managed to thrive, in a sense. There's a resurgence of the identity, and you being a Kalinago president is a good example of that. But do you think that's fair to say that really you are one of the most prominent indigenous communities in the Caribbean?
So I would say that, because we are fortunate to have been given a piece of land communally held, which was called the Carib Reserve at the time, and now we call it the Kalinago Territory, compared to our brothers and sisters, our indigenous people in St. Vincent, who are not on a reservation. They are struggling to really continue to live as indigenous people. We have the same in Belize, and of course in Trinidad it's the same. But here in the Kalinago territory, because of the fact that we have this communal piece of land, this reservation, this territory that we consider to be ours, we are able to manage it in a way that is sustainable, in a way that we say is resilient to our indigenous tribe. And so we've survived whatever has been thrown at us, colonization, Whatever illnesses, whatever disasters have been thrown at us, but we have been able to be resilient. And today we sit in the Skabe, which was known as the meeting place for our indigenous chiefs and their communities. And we see a resurgence, of course, of the indigenous culture across the Caribbean, I think.
Well, as we've been speaking, you can probably hear that the weather has changed. And this is a great example of just how lush this country is. And you have these wonderful mountains. It was sunny just a few moments ago. And we are in this traditional building. Maybe Lorenzo, Chief Sanford, you can explain a bit more about this building, but I'm still dry. I think you're both still dry as well. So it just shows that these traditional methods do work. First of all, explain where we are.
Okay, so today we are in the Kalinago territory. First of all, you are in the Kalinago territory. And right now we are sitting at the Kalinago Barana Ote, which is our sacred site within the Kalinago.
So what's that word again? The
Kalinago Barana Ote.
And what does that mean?
So it means the little village by the sea.
Right.
So that's where we are today. We are at the Kalinago Barana Ote. And we are at the under a structure called the Tabui or the Kabe. And it is a structure that was used before for large gatherings and mainly because for the men who took decisions on behalf of the tribe itself. So right now we are having discussions here. We have women involved because of we coining the term of gender equality. Mm-hmm. Have the women being part of decisions that is being made on behalf of them in the Kalinago territory. So we are at the Kabe right now, and it is a structure that we have used, and we still continue to build it within the island itself, the A-frame, which is resilient to the wind. When it comes through, it goes over. The openness of it, where wind can pass through, where we won't have a lot of damage being done to the building itself. So I want to say welcome to the Kalinago territory, welcome to the Kalinago Barana Ote, and welcome to our sacred space.
So, yeah, so we got a lovely tour of the territory yesterday, and learned a lot about what you've achieved here. Now, you're 26 now, I think.
27.
You're 27, but you were 22 when you were elected chief. I won't embarrass the president by asking her if she voted for you, but we can talk about that when you're not here. I'm sure she did. But what makes a 22-year-old want to do this kind of thing, like to be involved as a community leader? I mean, the responsibility must have been quite daunting.
So it is something that I really looked at before going into it. We've in the past, what made me go up for the chief elections was that what we saw was a recurrence of leaders being elected over the same ones putting themselves forward. And as a young individual, I think that I would have made a difference, seeing that we have a very young Kalinago community. So what I did, I reached out to the Kalinago community, which was right after Hurricane Maria itself, and seeing how can we build back our community to be what it is or what we want it to be. And so I was just fresh out of college. I went around after Maria hit. I went around with my stepfather. We did a lot of roofing for individuals within the community whose homes were completely lost. And what we saw was that a lot of materials were being given to these individuals, but they didn't have the financial capacity to get this work done themselves. So what we saw was that, you know, it was better for us if we have that community spirit in us. We would go out and be part and play our part into building back our community to what we want it to be. So we went out there, did a lot of homes, and then, you know, different agencies come in, and there came the contracts of letting people do their full roofs be done again. So all that was part of me, you know, going out in the community, trying to see what the young people really want for the community.
And that being in your early 20s, you had a different youth perspective on what the community could be.
Most of the time we think that it is ourselves who put things forward, but it's what the community want from us. So I looked at it as a ground-up approach. So I reached out to them, seeing what would they want for themselves, and I will be the leader that they put forward so that we can get these things accomplished on behalf of the community.
What did people, your generation and older, because often leaders are the elders, the idea of giving someone so young all this responsibility and representing your community?
Well, the fact is, as Chief mentioned earlier, we had a number of people who were basically recycled over and over. Same leaders going up and the same thing happening.
Same old
and same old. So we wanted to give a young person the opportunity to see the difference. Because you may not know, but our population is about 65% youthful. And so we felt, let's give a young person a chance to see what is the difference. And hence the reason why I think people rallied around him and gave him that level of authority to be the Kalinago chief. That's what I would say for now.
And you said that you were inspired by the destruction of Hurricane Maria to think about how you could build back better. So take me back to 2017 and where you were. And it's hard to imagine now, as we sit here, everything is so green and so beautiful, but what did it look like after the hurricane ripped through the country?
Okay, so I was in the southeastern part of the region, of the Kalinago, of Dominica itself.
Which is the hardest hit region, I think.
It was the first hit region when it came to Maria. And when 4 days after Maria itself, I mean, there were still strong winds and all of that, and I decided, you know, I need to leave where I was to come to check on my family, because there was no internet, there was no connection or calls that you could get through to these places. So I decided to, you know, have my little backpack and start walking across. All roads were down and, you know, blocked. And so there are trails that were in existence long before, and which is part of the Waitikubili National Trail. And that was the trail that I used from Dalis to the Kalinago territory. And as I came across these mountains, you try to look to see if there you may see a little greenery on when you reach at these points. But further you go, nothing. All you could see was destroyed homes and people hanging out their clothes to dry because everything that they had was wet. You know, when I reached to the southern end of the Kalinago territory, which was the Sineku community, when I looked, all I see was brown. You know, destroyed homes, nothing, and people, you know, not knowing what to do, and all of that.
And President Burton, you were in the Kalinago territory, I think. You have a place here, so must have been quite a scary day for you as well.
Sure. So I got up on the Monday morning, and after saying my prayers, I looked at the position of the storms, because there was not just Maria, there was also Hurricane Lee at the back of Maria. And when I looked at the trajectory, I saw that it was going to hit Dominica. Maria was going to come into us directly. I didn't know at the time what would be the strength of the storm, but I knew it was going to be a direct hit. And so I woke up and I called the Kalinago chief at the time and also the parliamentary representative to say, where are you guys? I asked the chief, please call a meeting, an emergency meeting of the council, because we are going to get a direct hit. I don't know the strength. I said the same thing to the parliamentary representative, and I said to him, have your guys, because he had a team of guys. I say, have your guys go to the homes of the elderly and let's take them out and bring them to the shelters. And that is exactly what he did. In the same breath, I said to my husband, go get your mother. And I went to look for my dad, and I went to look for the elderly people living close to me to say to them, the hurricane is gonna hit us. I do not know the strength, but we need to get you all to shelters. And so the work began. And so by 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon, we were settled, and most people who had to move were moved. And then the wind started picking up. I think the tropical storm force wind started coming in. You could see the sea, and the sea was raging. And from that time on, I listened to the radio until about 6 in the evening, when I heard the then parliamentary representative for the southeast, the Lapland area, said that his roof had gone. And a few people in Kalinago, their roofs had already gone also. And so I went downstairs my house, but most of my family stayed upstairs the house. And when my sister called about 7, she said, Dominica is going to get category 6, and it's going to be a direct hit. I said to her, yes, I know it's a direct hit. I didn't know what size, what strength it would be. And then I heard DBS also say that, and that was it. The storm pounded us for hours and hours. And as a Christian community, myself being some a layperson in church, I prayed. And suffice to say, I even one time said to the Lord, but Lord, are you not hearing our prayers? Because the pounding was so hard, you know, and where my home is, there's a little valley below, so I could hear the roaring of the wind coming up the hill. And I'm saying to myself, I'm in a concrete structure. I can just imagine what's happening to the rest of the Kalinago territory. And I started praying that God would cover these people who were living in small houses, you know. And it was a very painful experience. It is an experience that you would not want ever in your life for anybody to go through. When we woke up at 4 a.m, I felt for myself that the sea was very close to my home. But that was not true. It is because all the trees were gone, the houses were gone, and so it looked like the sea was very close to my home. When I looked at the rest of the areas where I could see, I could count few roofs or few houses. And it was very, very, it was just something that you really do not want to experience again in your life. And I recall at 4 when my son came downstairs, my son is a police officer, he came downstairs and I said to him, what about the roof? And he said, Mommy, don't worry about the roof. Are you all okay? Water was coming in downstairs through one of the windows and so on. I said, we are okay. And then he said, Mommy, it's okay. The roof is okay. But they actually had to tie the roof during the heat of the hurricane. And it was not a pleasant sight. When you woke up next morning, you felt for yourself that it was fire that had passed through the trees. But in fact, it was not fire. It was the wind and I think the sea salt, the water from the sea. And the entire territory was just unimaginable. I recall a few days where we were able to cut the trees so that people could come down to the river. And a few days we went up to look at our other relatives and other friends and just to look at the area. And you said to yourself, really, as the Prime Minister indicated when he did his first address, it was a miracle that nobody died in the Kalinago territory. It was indeed a miracle.
And as you say, you were quite lucky to be in a concrete structure because there are very few concrete structures. We've seen quite a lot now. Mm-hmm. Is this all construction that's happened as a result of the hurricane to try and have more safety for people to make the community more resilient to the next time that there is something similar happening?
Yes, it is. So within the Kalinago territory right now, we have a lot of different housing projects that is going on, and it's all in the gear of building resilience and, you know, not moving back to the, I would say, wooden structures that we had before, for we see what Maria did to the homes within the Kalinago territory. So what was the take on it? We went out in the community with the different agencies that were proposing homes to be built within the territory and seeing how we can, you know, mimic these houses so that it will look Kalinago. But we also looked at, you know, when we speak of resilience and continued culture and heritage of the Kalinago people, it also stems from within itself as an individual, not only with the structures that is being built. So in the Kalinago territory, we have about 5 different housing programs that is going on. We have the World Bank, which did 100. Which is on par to do 122 homes. We have the European Union that is doing 50 homes within the Kalinago territory. We had a program, the Preconco Sustainable Solutions, who also did 48 homes within the Kalinago community. So all of this is in the gear of building these homes within the communities so that people wouldn't have to go to these hurricane shelters. They can stay in the comfort of their own home and face, or just in case a storm or hurricane comes through the Kalinago territory. Also, in the gear of building resilience, we have looked at within the community of Bataka itself, where we have a multi-purpose emergency shelter that is being built, that is going to be built in the next few months, and bidding has already been done, and it's hopefully we are going to have some groundbreaking within the next few months. And this structure will be all looking at resilience within the community and how we can, you know, safeguard our people in the Kalinago territory.
And in the immediately prior to a hurricane, information is so important as well, isn't it? Knowing that something's about to happen. You were talking, President Burton, about how, you know, you were able to have access to phones, so you could say, okay, a storm's on its way. But not everyone has that access to information. And early warning systems, we know, are crucial to saving lives. Is that something you've been looking at in Dominica?
Yes, definitely. The government, as part of the resiliency program, is also constructing some sites that they could access better reading from the climates and be able to disseminate that information early to the people. As Chief mentioned, the government has also constructed and will construct a resilience center in the Kalinago territory, but we already have about three of them constructed elsewhere in Dominica. So those resilience buildings will also assist in ensuring that lives are saved and people have access to somewhere that they can at least shelter the storm, because government is not able to build a home, as you would understand, for every individual or every family. And so some families who do not have safe houses would have to access those areas. And so these services are being put in place. More and more we say, let us use the technology. We also have a program where government is building some of the ICT hubs in various communities where people can access the information readily available before the storm, so that you can take precaution. If you need to go to a shelter, you do not wait for the last minute, but you do that. You go early to the shelter. The disaster management program is also doing quite a bit. The Office of Disaster Management is also doing quite a bit of information and awareness building. So they have disaster shelters within every community in Dominica where people are able to access the information. People are able to know what to do, not only in terms of a hurricane, but if there's a traffic accident or if there's somebody's drowning or something, that they are able to know what it is that they have to do. So a lot of information is being passed down to every household, to the children at school and to secondary schools as well as primary schools, so that you have the information at hand, that when you know a warning is given, what it is, when you know you have to, when you hear that a storm is coming, you have to know what are the different steps and what it is that you have to even take to the shelters when you are going to the shelters. And so the construction of the houses and the regional centers are something that government is really trying to ensure that we save lives in building resiliency. Yes, we can fix a house after a hurricane. We may be able to replant our trees, but if a life is lost, that is very very concerning to us, and hence the reason why government is trying its best to see how we can build.
After the destruction, Chief, you saw people had everything was destroyed and they didn't have the means to build. And at a national level, the government doesn't necessarily have all the funds needed to build back. At an international level, climate finance is a big issue. And do you think that you are seeing things moving in the right direction in terms of finance being available to countries like Dominica to help you deal with an issue, the climate crisis, that frankly you weren't responsible for?
So if we listen to what transpires at the meetings we call COP27, right, the UN Climate Conference, we have a lot of these big countries who are the ones who we believe are the ones affecting the climate the most, our ozone layer and all of the others. And these countries, they make promises that they will give, that they will try their best to reduce the carbon footprint. And these countries, as I mentioned earlier when we spoke, they need to put into action what it is that they promise that they will do. Because let us look at Hurricane Maria. Our Prime Minister, a few days after Hurricane Maria, went to the UN. And the UN Secretary General came to Dominica. There were many pledges made at that UN conference. But you ask ourselves, why were not the pledges fulfilled? And so Dominica has to now partner with other agencies. Dominica now has to take loans to do to ensure that we build a climate resilient country. For example, the chief mentioned about the World Bank housing project, which is we call the housing recovery project. It's actually a loan from the World Bank to the government of Dominica for construction of houses for vulnerable people. And we are saying that these big countries can put their money where their mouth is, show some action and assist instead of having government to take loans that our public officers still have to pay back. The country has to pay back. So give us some grant, give us grant financing. And if it means that you put, you upgrade our level of insurance so that when there's a disaster, we do not have to come to you to ask you to give us $10 million or whatever. The insurance company will now pay to our government and we will be able to sufficiently provide for the needs of our people. And so we really want to appeal to those larger countries to assist us. When you go to COP and you make a commitment, we would really want to see your commitment is fulfilled to the T. And we are very thankful for the UN organizations who are assisting Dominica in putting together, and some other countries. We are very happy for the collaboration, but it will take a little more. And as you mentioned earlier, Dominica is in Hurricane Ali. And so we are one of the Caribbean countries that really need the assistance from the commitments made at COP.
And Chief Sanford, I saw you nodding. You agree with all that, I'm sure both of you are lobbying for increased financing for climate. And the insurance idea you mentioned is one that has been around for, the last year or two, I think, which is a very interesting idea to help you to finance what you need to do to rebuild and to become more resilient. Just one more question for you, Chief. The Kalinago have been here for hundreds of years on Dominica, I think, 500 years?
More than 500 years.
Do you think that accumulated knowledge, that folk knowledge of the country, is that helping you to adapt to where we are now in terms of the climate and in terms of the economy?
I would say that it has helped us to bounce back in a very fast way. For one, with indigenous knowledge based on, you know, how we plant our agricultural practices when it comes to how we plant our food. And what we definitely hope is that this indigenous knowledge should be passed on for the younger generation, so they may be aware of what is happening and how we can still use this indigenous knowledge to safeguard our future within the Kalinago territory or on the island by itself.
And yes, you do seem to have bounced back relatively quickly. I know it was 2017, but I think initial estimates were that it would take at least 20 years to... Yes. That was what you thought, right? Yes. Looking at the destruction. So you've really come a long way since then. And I hope that with everything you're doing, the next time a hurricane or a tropical storm hits, that both of you and everyone else here will be safe and that the country can build back quickly again. Just wanted to say one more thing, that Dominica will play a role in the Small Island Developing State Conference. I don't think, President, you'll be there personally, but the country will be represented. And that conference is taking place 27th to 30th of May in nearby Antigua. Mm-hmm. And resilience is going to be a big part of the discussions that take place there at that conference. So I want to thank you both for being here. And of course, I have to say, Ayahora.
Ayahora.